to all my friends at iShook. We finally got my friend here, Mr. Adam Susnick. I'm a fan of his. Shout out to my producer, Ruben Benjamin, for getting me to do this and pushing this as much as possible. And I'm so happy to have Mr. Susnick here. He is a financial guru. He is a successful individual, life changer. He knows lifestyle. He knows life. My friends, we have the most realistic person you can ever have on our show, Mr. Susnick.
How are you doing, brother? Bro, Benny, what an intro. Thank you. I feel honored. You can just call me Adam. I can't believe, like,
well, listen.
How old are you? Because you look like you're 26, but your beard looks like you're 126. So what's going on?
I am literally 41 years old.
Okay, so we're the same age. I'm 43. So
we're in the same.
What's going on with the beard?
This is genetics, by the way. This is I can't stop it. And I'm not going to call
it. I'm sure you get it all the time, but give me the beard story, because the picture I saw on the stream was you with a hat with a little beard like me. What do you?
As you know, I don't really disclose this publicly, but I am a rabbinical scholar. I'm a rabbi in a community. And honestly, it's not just the beard itself. It's just, I said, listen, I got to make a look that's different for myself, unique to myself. And honestly, I was tired of shaving and trimming. So I said, forget it. Leave it alone. It saves time and money. Let's do it. Let's be
what it is. I heard three things. Number one, rabbinical.
Right.
Bless. Number two, kind of lazy.
Yeah.
Number three, save that money. I'm with you.
Yeah. That's how I look at it, brother. I'm happy. First of all, I'm going to open this up because I love you guys very much. How Manek is really good. I mean, Manek gets me access to you. And I think, and it gets all other people access potentially to me as well. And I think that's a social media thing I could have never developed. And I'm sorry, you know, I thought we were going to talk about this then, but I wanted to mention it now because I'm like mesmerized how this thing, I think, can only have happened after development of your podcasts to where they are now. I mean, that's how you got all the connections, you got all the resources, and you say, oh, boom, let's do this interconnectivity of friends and other like-minded individuals. Am I right or wrong with what I'm saying?
Look, Manek is an extension of basically what we're building at Valuetainment. So, you know, shout out to PBD for him having this vision. But, you know, with any idea, with any company, always starts with a spark. And the spark for PBD was, you know, in business, sometimes you have to deal with lawyers. And you know what it's like to deal with the lawyers.
Yeah, no doubt.
And, I think, you know, what he said is like he met with the lawyer for like 8 minutes or something, but he billed him for a half hour. And he goes, why are you billing me for a half hour? It was only 8 minutes. He says, no, that's not how billing works. We bill up. So whether you spend 1 minute or 29 minutes, you're getting billed for a half hour. He said, this is ridiculous. Then PBD, call it an opportunist, call it a capitalist. Call it a guy who just doesn't forget. Maybe he seeks revenge. Said, all right, I'm going to show you. Built this app where you can pay by the minute. And whatever type of expert advice you need in your life, you can pay by the minute. So you're not being charged for a half hour when you only spoke for 8 minutes, as an example. So there's business leaders, there's thought leaders, there's fitness influencers, there's all types of influencers and celebrities and just people who have done the job before, whatever it is. You can connect with them all on Manek by the minute. And the beautiful thing is each of the people charge whatever they want to charge. So, all right, you want to charge $5, $10 a minute? Good. You want to be like PBD or Andrew Tate or someone who's amazingly famous? You charge, you know, $100 a minute, whatever it is. You know, it's capitalism. It's free market capitalism, and let the market decide what they're willing to pay. But if it's an amazing, I'm one of the top couple of people on Manek. And let me tell you, as rewarding as it is for people to get advice, it's even more rewarding for me as a, you know, someone who's worked in finance and someone who worked in media and someone that really loves relationships, to getting to know people, getting to know their issues and solving issues. I love it. Some people are just naturally born to be people person. That's kind of who I am. So revenue and relationships and some rest, and on the seventh day, God rested. There it is.
That's a good one. No, listen, I honestly, there is a lot of opportunity, Manek, and I think it should be one of the staple platforms out there, especially since there's so many types of social media influencing companies. No doubt Manek is going to be on the top level of that, because you're getting in touch with real people, not these, you know, no offense to the social media influencers. I applaud them for the content that they create. But at the same time, you know, I tried one of those platforms. They don't introduce for me any conversions. Look, we did a podcast with Tom. We're doing a podcast with you. This is a conversion, and this is a strong conversion. I mean, I don't want to give numbers and stats, but for sure, whatever the numbers and stats compared to a Twitter ad or a Facebook ad, in Manek, you're getting 10 times more on a conversion. And I can tell this from doing this for 10 years on conversions and advertising and many of the things that we're trying to do in the space as well with social media. Listen, as you know, yeah, no doubt. No doubt, brother. No doubt. I mean, listen, you know, every good idea comes with also, like you said, he might have got pissed off that 1 minute. I know what he feels like. You know, sometimes you pay the lawyers, overpay them. And then at the time you think, listen, you know, sometimes you want to create this huge idea for yourself. You do it for yourself more than sometimes you do for the public. And at the end, it becomes for the public. And that's what I think it could potentially could have.
Well, let me tell you, Benny, before we move on.
Sure, brother.
Do I call you Rabbi Benny?
Benny's fine. Benny's fine.
Benny, listen. You know, I've known PBD since 2012. So, and that was, we were just in the insurance business together. We met working out in the gym one time at a financial conference. Hey, what are you doing? How you doing? All right, boom. I didn't know he did valuetainment until about 2016, right?
Right.
And I didn't join valuetainment until 2020. But what's my message to the people out there? It always just starts with an idea. And then taking the first step, just get started. And then putting that idea into action. I remember when he told me about the lawyer story way before Manek was even a thing. And then all of a sudden, you know, I want to build something. All of a sudden, some of those conversations, all of a sudden we built the beta version of Manek. All of a sudden people are doing things on Manek. All of a sudden we're announcing Manek. All of a sudden we're doing thousands of downloads. It's like it all started with an idea. And I think that's testament to anybody, whatever you're going to do. Wherever field, whatever career, it's an idea. It gets put into action. You believe in it. And then you go. And then you work on it. It's been, I was the guinea pig for year one. The guinea pig. All right, I tried to do my act. It didn't work. It didn't work. Oh, it fell. So I just do it on Zoom. Oh, my God, the call. Blah, blah. I go, they get this. Like, and now it's like we have thousands of people on it. And it's like I feel honored to see the evolution of it. But I think it's true in any business that, you know, it gets said all the time, Benny, good things take time. You got to crawl before you walk. You got to walk before you run. You got to run before you do marathons. It's the same way it is in business. If it was easy, everyone would do it, but you got to start somewhere. And I saw the vision and the story from PBD. And now, you know, we're competing. So it's pretty cool.
Well, one thing I love about it is I can get recognized now because of you guys. So congrats on that, because that gives me a jump start of at least 10 steps, even 20 maybe. Who knows? You know, like, we don't know.
And that beard, you're going to get recognized wherever you go regardless. That's not fair, but respect.
I appreciate that. Listen, you're awesome. Listen, you're awesome. Listen, I really want to get to this thing, and I wanted your opinion many times. And by the way, I know that you had a little back and forth with, I think, what's his name? Bassam Youssef, right?
My friend, Bassam Youssef.
Right, Bassam Youssef. And there was one point that I really wanted you to tell him. And tell me what you think about this point. And then I want to go really into this Iran and Middle East thing and how really it's going to affect our day-to-day life in business. Because I always like to, in Ayashok, to really take worldly events, give an opinion and see, okay, how does that affect our livelihood in America and in general in all the globe? So the first question I'm going to ask, this issue that everybody's saying occupation, right? Do people actually realize that the benefits that they have in America is because we are occupying a land that was not ours?
Huh. Yeah. So the question is what? Do Americans realize that we took the land?
Like, how can Exactly. How do you claim an occupation? Which I don't know what that means, an occupation. There's borders and there's security. Like you would have any other country would have a border. But besides the point, let's say it is an occupation, right? But you're protesting about an occupation in a land that is occupied. How is that not being ever spoken in the mainstream media or in any podcast in general?
Well, look, I mean, and I'll give the disclaimer that this was not my expertise. This is not something that I was like, Adam, I want to talk about Israel and the
No, I
Palestinians.
don't want to talk about it. I just want.
No. I'm
All right.
totally comfortable talking about it. I'm saying,
Okay. All
I'm
right.
giving the disclaimer that, my brand was, getting laid, getting paid, and doing it your way. That's my thing. Like, make
Okay.
money, live your life, do what you want to do, have a beautiful
Right,
girl.
right.
That's what I want to do.
Right.
But I am Jewish. I've been to Israel a handful of times. I loved it. I've had a bar mitzvah. I have friends who are Jewish, Christian, Catholic, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu, Sikh, everything in between. I'm the type of person that wants people to get along and unite and unify. And to see what's going on in Israel and Gaza, it's heartbreaking. It's horrible. And at the end of the day, there's always going to be people that agree and that disagree, and there's going to be disagreements and land disputes and who was here first and what happened. But it all comes down to people sitting at a table and having a conversation and negotiating. In any regard, whether it's business, whether it's land, it all starts with people sitting down and talking. And if you follow what's going on in the past, or you follow what's going on today, this isn't debatable. Israel is literally negotiating with terrorists.
Right.
So, they say never negotiate with terrorists. Well, Israel's in the unfortunate situation where they're literally negotiating with terrorists over getting the hostages back, over a ceasefire, much less land disputes. And it's sad to see what's happening. I can tell you this conclusively. I don't know, me personally, I don't know any Jew, any Jewish person, any Israeli who says the following: I want to kill them all. I
Right.
want it all. Zero. And if anyone said that, I would check that in a second and say, what are you talking about, bro? What's going on here? Because we believe in living alongside people and getting along and having differences, but maybe there's disagreements, but not being disagreeable. On the flip side of things, how many videos have you seen? Kill the Jews, death to the Jews, death to Israel, death to America, from people in America. There's a completely different mindset. There's a completely different mindset, and it's very upsetting. Now, how do you change an ideology? How do you change a mindset? It a generation is 25 years. Hamas has been in power since what, 2006?
Yeah, about yeah,
So I remember there was the
2005, six, right?
disengagement, 2005, 2006. I think they started the process of moving out, the disengagement from the occupation of Gaza.
Right,
There
but
was
everybody's forgetting the expulsion of 50,000 Jews from Gush Katif. People are forgetting that 50,000 expelled from Gaza, where Gazans want to live in Israel, but they didn't want the Jews living in Gaza. I mean, that's a separate issue. Again, it's not relevant to
No,
what's
we
going
all
on now.
know that getting back to the disengagement, and I'll say that we all know that in Israel there's what, 6 million Jews that live there, 7 million Jews, what's the number?
About seven, yeah, about seven. I think
Okay.
the
There's
rest
2 million
are
Arabs that live there.
right.
Equal rights, can do anything they want. So why is it that anyone, Muslim, Christian, Zoroastrianism, whatever, you could live in Israel, no problem, equal rights. Zero Jews in Gaza. How many Jews live in Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, Iraq, Iran, Qatar, Saudi? I mean, Saudi is a little bit different. You could be Muslim in a Jewish country or a Christian country, no problem. You cannot be Jewish or even Christian for that matter in a Muslim country. There's a double standard and there's a hypocrisy there. And you could call it a caliphate. You can call it what comes from the Quran. It is what it is. But the occupation, it's a very weird situation because at the end of the day, people need to get together and have an agreement. And the difference is Israel will say, I'll give you this, give us this, give us this. And what do they say? No. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. What does that mean to me? They want it all. You know, right. There used to be a song. This is pretty weird. It's a weird correlation. There used to be a rapper. You're out in where?
New York City, Queens.
You're in New York. There was a rapper in the West Coast called Warren G. Right?
Okay. I don't know about
regulate.
That. Right? Okay, yeah, that I know.
But he
okay.
also sang a song that said, I want it all. And it went like this. I want it all. I want it all. The women, the clothes, the cars. I want it all. That's what Palestinians are basically saying about Israel.
Right. They want it all.
They're saying we want some. They want it all. And how do you negotiate with someone that wants it all, doesn't want you there in their land as an infidel? And anytime that there's a peace agreement, anytime that there's an Oslo Accords, the Abraham Accords, they come to the table, they say, no. We want it all. So where do you want the Jews to go? The reason the Jews have a land in 1948 called Israel is because they went all over the world. And every place they went, listen, quite frankly, it wasn't too safe. So this is the one place, other than America today, where it said that we know that you're not just going to try to kill us. Though you'll still try to kill us.
Right.
We'll develop what we got to develop and the IDF. So it's a long conversation. But this occupation thing is, it's tragic, it's sad, but they want it all. And the Jews are at least willing to compromise. Last point, they say, you know, the Jews want peace, right? The people of Gaza and the Palestinians, they also want peace. The difference is they want a piece of a Jew over here and a piece to be over here and a piece to be over here. If the Jews, if the Palestinians and Hamas put down their guns, there'll be peace. If the Jews put down their guns, there'll be pieces of them everywhere. And we learned that on October 7th.
Right. Agreed. I'm not sorry. I don't think since the Holocaust, we should never be a passive nation ever. That's my opinion in general. We should not be passive. We were passive then. It was a mistake.
It's, you know, there's a difference between being peaceful and a complete pacifist.
Right.
Sure, live in peace, but don't get pushed around and don't fall victim to what Jews have fallen victim to for thousands of years. Never again, they say. And this time, we mean it.
I think I was one of the first people on Twitter to classify the October 7th as a modern pogrom. If we check the data on your Twitter, I think we could find that out. I probably was the first one to post it. Because obviously, thousands of years, we've gone through pogroms. And I don't see any difference between what happened on October 7th and all the other depictions of these programs that existed. And I don't think since we do have the state of Israel, we shouldn't go against it. It doesn't mean we have to agree to the government decisions and all that. I think governments are different than nations and statehoods. That's what I personally
believe. I fully agree. And I'll tell you, there's a difference between Judaism, the religion.
Correct.
Being Jewish as a people and as a culture, and a country called the State of Israel. They're three separate things.
I mean, wouldn't you want to add government also? I mean, government is acting politics.
There's governments.
Right, but not necessarily the State of Israel as a government, right?
Well, the government runs Israel, but Israel's a democracy.
Right.
So you see what's going on right now. You have Netanyahu, you have Benny Gantz, you've got all the different leaders. They're disagreeing. That's a democracy. So, like, the beauty of a democracy is I could say I love America. I love America. But Jesus, what George W. Bush was fucking, what he did was horrible.
Right. But you could do that. You could say that.
You know, I love America. But Jesus, Donald Trump, the way he acts like this. I love America. But the Biden decisions, what he's done with the woke, that's the beauty. So I love Israel, but wow, Netanyahu really could do better this. You know, I love America, but what they're doing in the Likud party or the left party, like, that's fine. But to say Jews as a whole,
no, right?
Judaism as a whole, I don't play that game.
It's like saying the MAGAs are deplorable. Remember that? When they say MAGAs are deplorable. It's the same thing. You can't classify a whole massive group in such a large, vast template. It's a fail. It's a huge fail.
She called it, Hillary Clinton that you're referencing, called it the basket of deplorables.
Right.
She actually referenced that before even MAGA was even a thing, which turned into MAGA, basically. But anytime that you lump all people into one thing, you're eliminating what is the essence of life of having individuality.
Right.
And having your own opinion and your own stance on things. You know, I'll tell you one thing. I say this all the time. This might upset you a little bit.
No, it's okay. No. I'll take the hit.
I say, it's not about you. I say, listen, some of my favorite people in this world are Jews. And some of my least favorite people in this world are Jews. And by the way, that's the same for Mexicans. It's the same for Irish. It's the same for Asians. It's the same for Catholics. It's the same for Muslims. Some of my favorite people in this world are my Saudi friends. Some of my least favorite people in this world are other Muslims. So, like, we're all individuals. We all have our own actions. I don't like lumping people. So, you know, I've said things that I said, you know, I probably should have said it better. I've said things even on that Bassem Youssef podcast. I could have said it better. But by the way, I think I took him to school in that podcast.
I think you did a very good job, honestly. I think you did it. Listen, no offense. One thing he did educate me, and I did not know about this, and I was glad of watching your show, where I did not know that there was an agenda by the deep state of Israel to vaccinate in order to prevent the future of the Ethiopian Jews. So basically, they were vaccinating in order to make them unable to have children, right?
And yeah, I don't even know if that's true.
I don't know either, but I... Oh, well,
just because he said it on the podcast, and I was like, yeah, I don't know about that. He goes, yeah. Believe me. Don't take his word for it.
Yeah, okay. So we got to do our research. So I suggest everybody to do it.
Benny, how many times have you been to Israel?
I was born in Israel.
You're born in Israel.
I'm revealing information about me that I don't even put on LinkedIn, brother. You take the power out of me. So I was born in Israel, moved to America when I was 12.
I've been to Israel. It's a simple thing. How many Jews, like, I could be right, I could be wrong. I'm just saying what I would do if I wanted to fact check that. How many Jews came to Israel? Ethiopian Jews came? And how many are today? Have they been fruitful and multiplied, or have they disseminated? I can fact check it right now. So the point is, I wouldn't take my friend, Bassem Youssef, by his word on that. I would like to do some facts.
I agree. You know what? I take it back then, if I can. You know, I agree with what you're saying. We have to do research and really double check everybody's statement when it comes to those high level statements.
Look, if you actually want to go do this, you know, this whole conversation of the genocide. When I said to Bassem Youssef, I said, you know, number one, you know, us Jews, we kind of know a thing or two about genocide. We kind of win in the game, if you know what I mean. 6 million Jews in the Holocaust in 5 years. We know a thing or two. We're very paranoid. So when you see the numbers, you know, of how many Jews were in Europe in the 1930s versus the Jews in the 1950s, there's a clear distinction.
Yeah.
But if you look at the number of Palestinians in Gaza that went from 500,000 in 1990 to 2 million in 2024, that's a pretty big increase. That's not a genocide. Right. And if you want to say, all right, how many total Palestinians were there overall? There was 2 million in 1990 and 5 million today. We're either the worst genociders in the league, or we have to admit that this isn't really a genocide. Yes, we are going after Hamas. Yes, there is collateral damage in war. It's disgusting. It's horrible. You know, whoever numbers you believe, 30,000 people have been killed. You know, they say that 10 to 15,000 have been Hamas fighters. So that puts it at maybe 2 to 1, what have you. It sucks. It's horrible. But then they also say, well, like, you know, the other people were women and children. Well, how do you, so a woman can't be a terrorist, or she can't harbor a terrorist?
Right.
You know, we just saw what happened in Australia. Did you see the...
The stabbing.
Mall? Yeah. Of Emmanuel Marimar, the high priest, he was stabbed by a 16-year-old, tried to kill him. A 16-year-old legally is still a child. So if there's a 16-year-old with a gun or a knife that's trying to commit murder, and you kill him, did you kill a woman and children? So, like, it's very nuanced. I'm not saying that innocent people haven't died. I'm not saying that, but...
I mean, how many American soldiers were killed in Iraq with children holding, you know, M16s, you know, honestly? I mean, or any of these, you know, these weapons, I mean, like... Or well, bro, IEDs,
how many innocent civilians were killed in Iraq or in Afghanistan just because there was a war going on? We don't know because nobody talks about it.
Correct.
But when it comes to Israel, it's front page news.
Right, but I think one thing that we're also forgetting, and I mentioned this with Tom, is that today's, and I want to actually respond to one thing he said. I wasn't, you know, responsive, and I want to see what you take on it. That today is probably Ukraine and Israel are the first two wars that are being monitored and posted by social media, where you have soldiers posting their actions on social media. The Iraq, Afghanistan war. Can you imagine if Vietnam had social media? All the atrocities that some of those soldiers were doing and vice versa would be posted. All those stories. Think about it. I mean, we are the first two, these are the first two wars that have social media. And then he mentioned that proves that they're civilians. But that also proves that that civilians have social, they have access to the internet.
While the war's happening. I've seen a ton of videos of what's going on in Gaza and Israel. I haven't seen that many videos from what's going on in Ukraine. I haven't.
Right, because Zelensky actually dropped the internet in Ukraine. He doesn't release it. That's where Tucker Carlson mentioned the whole thing where, you know, what's going on here. He's actually a deep state also censoring everybody. I think that's what's happening. But, you know, I don't want to, you know,
start. I don't know what's going on. I'm just saying there's certainly a double standard. And I brought this up with our friend Bassem Youssef. I said there's a double standard when Israel and the Jews do something. Sorry, there is. And I called it the BLM version of the Middle East. What do I mean? I said, you know, there's black on black crime every day in America. By the way, there's crime everywhere that happens. It's front page news. If you watch the local news, breaking news, so-and-so got killed today. That's local news. Sorry. But every day in Chicago, in Baltimore, in New York, in DC, you name a city, unfortunately, there's black on black crime. It sucks. You don't hear about it. You know, on July 4th, there's this many people in Chicago. All right, maybe you don't hear about it. But let a white cop kill a black person. It's front page news. The riots. Call the riot police because they're coming. You know, we just had someone on the Peabody podcast. He's a Harvard professor.
I saw it and I watched him. He's very good, by the way.
He talked about, hey, by the way, I've done the research. He's a black guy, by the way. Okay. He said, look, I've done the research, and he put it in two categories. He said, small stuff, you know, hey, you know, what are you doing over here? Bumping up against cars. Yeah, I get it. Keep it moving, buddy. He said there was a little bit of racial profiling there. He admitted it. But when he said to actual police and killing black people or minorities for that matter and using racism, he said he found no evidence. And he said he had found a team of 8 researchers to fact check everything. He said, this can't be. This goes against the narrative. He said, all right, I got all this. Did a 100-something page report before I published this. Let me go get 8 more professional researchers to fact check this, see what's going on. Exact same results. And that, before he put out the data, people were like, dude, don't go live with this. Why? Because it's not. This isn't the story we know. That actually the cops really actually are not racist. They're not killing black people in a wider proportion. It's actually not true. They said, don't do this. He said, oh, now I'm definitely going to do this. Where am I getting at here? The cops, you know, the whole defund the police thing that was going on in 2020. They're not out there killing black people. They're not. They're doing their freaking jobs. Are there going to be mistakes? Yes. It's horrible. It sucks. Just like innocent civilians are dead in war. Right. So I said, in the Middle East, you know, I said, guys, you know, you heard about this Houthis. People were like, yeah, I just heard about them this year. I said, do you realize there's been a civil war in Yemen for 10 years between a proxy war between Saudi Arabia and Iran and these Houthis? And tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people have died. Hundreds of thousands of people have died. You've never even heard of it.
Right. And there's no genocide. There's no genocide there, right? There's no word of genocide.
Okay, you know, in Syria with Bashar al-Assad, you know, an hour north of Israel from the Golan Heights, Bashar al-Assad, they're fighting ISIS, they're fighting this. They got the Kurds are dying, okay? They got al-Qaeda. There's so much going on. There's gassing, there's people. Oh, Obama, the red line, don't do it. Hundreds of thousands of people have died, Arab on Arab. You don't hear shit. But let Israel get attacked on October 7th, defend themselves. It's a genocide. It's a genocide. Really? So there's clearly a double standard, you know, and that's why Gaza is the BLM of the Middle East. Wow. You know, the Arabs, God bless you. There's certain countries that are more peaceful. UAE, Qatar, some of the richest countries in the world. Kuwait. You don't hear suicide bombings. You don't hear war. You don't hear genocide. You don't hear any of that. And by the way, Israel's forming peace agreements with these countries. UAE, Oman, I want to say, Bahrain. They're working on it with Saudi Arabia. But all these other countries over here that are, as I called, shitholes, Afghanistan, Syria, those are the countries that actually are the countries that really...
I honestly think there was one mistake that was done. The king of Saudi Arabia and Netanyahu should have never announced the workings of the treaty. They should have announced it after the fact it was signed and sealed. This is a very important lesson. If you know you have an enemy like Iran and they're creating proxy states and proxy terrorist organizations, keep it on the hush. I mean, they kept it on the hush for the other states, the other UAE and Bahrain. They kept it on the hush on that. Why did they reveal it for Saudi Arabia? You just basically enticed Iran to activate. You know, think about that.
Yeah, I listen, it's hard not to disagree with that because look at what happened, you know, and I don't want to Monday Morty quarterback this thing, but they said that, you know, you got to move in silence and then never reveal your hand. They said this is what we're working on. And I still believe, my opinion, based on conversations I've had, I still think that, you know, those Abraham Accords, those peace agreements with Saudi will come to effect. It's obviously going to take some time with everything that's going on now. But look, here's the bottom line, Benny. The countries, the people in the Middle East, you know, the ones that aren't indoctrinated and completely just extremists and jihadists, they know that the biggest threat to peace and prosperity in the Middle East is the Islamic Republic of Iran, right? Not Israel, period. So Saudi Arabia knows specifically, you know, the Mecca of Islam, literally, that Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, is a way bigger threat than Israel has or will ever be. And eventually, in my opinion, that peace deal will get done.
So do you think that Iran, whatever they did, just really admitted in a way that they were involved with October 7th? Because what interest do you have to shoot rockets to Israel or to do all these ballistic engagement with Israel if you don't have a partaking or if you're not a co-conspirator with what happened with Gaza? Think about it. I mean, in that sense, I believe they just revealed that fact. And
Benny,
I think
was honestly, it ever even a question?
Well, people questioned. I mean, honestly, people did question. Look, people are still making the question that Iran is not part of it.
Follow the facts here. Okay. Number one, Israel is normalizing relationships with countries all over the Middle East.
Right.
Right. Their next move is the biggest piece on the chessboard, Saudi Arabia. Right. The Abraham Accords under Trump. It's happening. We know that Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, I've told myself I'm not just going to call it Iran anymore because it used to be Persia, it used to be Iran. Now it's the Islamic Republic of Iran. I want people to know that. We know that they're funding the Triple H, the Hamas, the Hezbollah, and the Houthis. We know this.
By the way, They're doing proxy wars. Sorry for cutting up. Triple H. That's good. You guys got Triple H.
Yeah. They're doing proxy wars all over the place. Their greatest export used to be education and culture. And that was the Persian Empire. And PBD is Persian from Iran. You know, that the say what you want about the Shah, but it was sort of the Paris of the Middle East at the time. And now their greatest export is oil and terrorism. So, and the oil funds the terrorism and in a vicious cycle. So for me, it's not even a question of the Islamic Republic's, of Iran's involvement in anything with the destruction of Israel. Hello, in the middle of Iran, they've got a big square that's the countdown to the death of the Zionist country of Israel. They call for the death and destruction of Israel and America. And you know what, Benny? I take them at their word.
I believe them. I do too.
They're not liars. That's what they want.
They're not at all.
They might be jihadists. They might be cold and calculated and brutal and extreme, but they're not liars. They mean what they say. Death to Israel, death to America. So we got to stick together.
Right, but for sure this is doing it really affects the supply chain. I know there was another project, I think you should add another project that Israel was planning on doing, and that's creating like a Panama Canal cutting through the Sinai Desert and a lot. I don't know if you knew that. I mean, but that itself is a huge thing that will change the supply chain completely, and they will be making the money instead of Egypt with regards to when they do that, creating a full Panama kind of canal going through Israelis a lot through the southern border with a lot.
So let me tell you, I just learned that. And that's the importance of having conversations and relationships and learning. I'm not the Israeli expert. You know,
I understand. We came in for something else and we were talking about it.
I love having this conversation because let me tell you, this woke me up. Let me tell you, you know, PBD wrote a book, multiple books that are Wall Street Journal bestsellers, one of which was Your Next Five Moves. That was in 2020, 2021. And then number two, this past year, Choose Your Enemies Wisely. And I read both books, obviously. And I struggled with the second book because I said, Pat, look, I don't really have that many enemies. Like, I'm kind of a guy that prides himself on not having enemies. You know, and he's like, that's your problem. You get along with everybody. You don't have any enemies. You need an enemy. I said, okay. Let me go. Who's my enemy? Right?
He's talking like Batman, by the way.
I'm American. I'm pro-American. I love being American. You know, I was briefly married to a British girl, you know, from Wales. Their family lived in London. And I would show up. This was 10 years ago. I would show up to London or to Wales with all the British people, and they're like, oh, the Americans here, you know, the Americans. I'm like, goddamn right. John Wayne just walked in the building, y'all. Okay? I'm proud to be American. So I know way more about American history and American politics and American dynamics than I ever will about Israel. I barely can read Hebrew. I barely speak Hebrew. It's not my thing. I speak English pretty well, I hope. I understand it even better. But it's not my thing, but I've learned this. But what I've realized is, you know, I didn't choose my enemies. My enemies chose me. And I had to realize, okay, you hate me or you hate my people just because we exist. So, right back at you.
Right.
Jihadists, terrorists, people that have that type of, mindset. And yeah, I basically realized that my enemy are not them. My enemy are two things: extremists and sloppiness. Two basically polarizing. On the right, on the spectrum, if you will, people who are not willing to negotiate whatsoever. No, they're not going to compromise. That's it. We want all of it. We want it all, or you're all going to die. It's a pretty extreme way to live. And that's not just with religion. That's with anything. Extremists. That's it. Extreme, zero compromise. I kind of have a problem with that. By the way, we have extreme people in the Jewish religion too. Where it's
of
like,
of course, of course. Every culture has its extreme group. That's exactly. Not that. But the question is, how do you classify extremism? That's what I think. That's where my issues lie when it comes to what is extremism called? Well, obviously, if extremism asks for the death of others, then that's
no doubt extremism. That's a line to cross when you call for death and murder and genocide.
No doubt.
That's a good barometer of you're kind of extreme. But it's funny that the Jewish extremists, they're not blowing up people. They're not blowing themselves up. I don't see that. I don't see that in any other religion. No offense,
no. There's never a suicide Jewish bomber. Let's take that fact and let's put that out there. I mean, show me one Jewish suicide bomber in history. I don't think it exists.
That's something that needs to be talked about and dealt with because, you know, they say when the Palestinians or the jihadists love their children more than they hate Israel, there'll be peace. But you have situations, and these people, the genocide, they're having so many kids. And then there's the pay for slay situation where I have 9 kids, I have 10 kids. This one blew himself up. He killed 17 Jews. Oh, Allah Akbar, thank you. It's like, that's what you wanted for your kid? It's sad. But
by the way, most people don't know this. I don't know if it's been ever mentioned, but and it's if you watch the Israeli but the reports, those who were able to capture a Jew as hostage got a free condo in Gaza. Now you know why they were dropping down condos in Gaza, to show that you wanted the condo, so you raped and killed our people for the condo. Guess what? You're not getting the condos. It's a theory that I have.
True? Is that a thing? That's actually true? That's validated?
Yes, they were promised to get condos, but I'm saying that if that's, I think, the reason why they were dropping down these buildings.
Well, listen, this is updated news because I know I used to do a joke when I used to be a stand-up comedian. It's so funny that, you know, if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it, right?
Right.
In 2000, what year was I doing comedy? 2004, I'm doing stand-up comedy. And this is on the heels of 9/11. We're fighting in Iraq. We're fighting in Afghanistan. We're learning for the first time really about Islamists and jihadists and the caliphate that came to be and suicide bombings. And I hear, well, yeah, if you do jihad and you do suicide bomb, you go to heaven and Allah gives you 72 virgins. You've heard this?
Yeah, I know this. Yeah, I know.
72 virgins. I said, look, 72 virgins. I said, how many virgins are there for every one guy? Like, wow, there's so many women out there for every one guy. But I said, let me tell you something. I don't know. This might be a little controversial. If you've ever taken a girl's virginity and maybe you don't necessarily want to date her and talk to her again, it's pretty annoying. 72 of them. So I said, maybe we'll do half virgins, half sluts. Maybe they know what they're doing a little bit more. You have a little fun, whatever. So I made this joke, but I'm familiar with the 72 virgins. Now it's 72 virgins and a condo?
That was a good one. And a condo, brother. And a condo.
In Boca Raton, in a condo. So it's.
Oh man, that's unbelievable. That was a good one. I like that. That's for the real right there. That's the short right there. Anaconda. Booyah. Listen, I honestly, that's what I think is going on. I mean, they were promised many financial gains when it came to what they did. And a lot of people's not reporting. Okay, listen, I get it. They're going to report whatever benefits them and their ideology. That's no doubt. But, I mean, my main concern is not just the fact of what happened. It's just like financially, like all these wars are affecting our daily lives, the food costs. The Con Edison in New York in November just raised the energy cost to 14%, literally 14%. These wars outside of Israel, outside of America, don't help us. especially the Ukrainian war. They got over, I think PBD had with Piers Morgan, he said something very right. He said that enormous amount of money went to Ukraine in the past year. I think 10 times more than Israel. $60 billion was the last amount.
Not even close. $100 billion. $100 billion went to Ukraine. I want to say since the history of Israel, I don't know if we've even given them $100 billion. Maybe a little bit more than last.
No, I think it's 10 total he mentioned, or 15. I don't think it's even 100, unless you include inflation costs, like what was then.
I'm saying since the history of Israel. So, right. Yeah, I don't know. I'll tell you what, if there's somebody that isn't happy about the war in Israel, it's Volodymyr Zelensky. He's like, I was the guy. I got all the money. I got all the attention.
Right. Now the attention is gone.
Because most people care way more about Israel than they do about Ukraine. Sad but true.
Yeah, but I think, that is. But there are a lot of Jews in Ukraine also. I mean, honestly. One of the rabbis had to run away from Ukraine because one of the extremist soldiers, I think, who are they called again? I forgot their names. I don't know if you remember their names. Where they hired these mercenaries where from Croatia, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And they said the Russians called in the Croatians who are anti-Semites. And they basically sent a letter saying that they're going to kill the rabbi of Chabad in Ukraine. Zelensky basically went to him and said, you got to leave Ukraine. So he just picked a plane and went to Israel. I mean, just because of that. I mean, people don't realize there's a lot of things going on there that they're just not reporting. I mean, in reality of what's really going on there with the war.
It's very weird that we all sold this bill of goods with Ukraine. Guys, put the pin on, post it on Instagram. You know, this dictator, this, you know, evil reincarnated Hitler-esque. Vladimir Putin, he's coming in Ukraine. He's, you know, he's coming in. He's doing all this. He's invading a country, Crimea. We have to support Ukraine. We have to support. All right, we'll support Ukraine. Okay. No, you have to. All right, we will. We are. All right. Hey guys, it's been a year. We gotta keep supporting Ukraine. Okay. Hey guys, it's been 2 years. All right. It's like, how long do we need to support Ukraine? Simple question. I'm not saying we should or not saying we shouldn't. I'm saying how long and how much.
Right. It should not exceed what they gave now. I mean, ultimately, how much you got to give? Another 100 billion? I mean, that 100 billion can save other states in the country. I mean, honestly, like.
I think it's perfectly acceptable to say, how long are we doing this? That's all. And if it's, hey, we're doing it because this protects the peaceful world order and it helps the world. Okay, cool. But show me that, like, show me how the numbers add up. I think there's a lot of people, dude, I'm pretty moderate on this. I'm definitely not an isolationist and I'm definitely not a hardcore war hawk interventionist. I'm just saying we got to kind of move here. And that's the whole conversation of if you're an isolationist, well, then you're going to create a void or a vacuum for other countries to step in, namely Russia, China, Iran. But if you're an interventionalist, you know, USA has more bases around the world than anybody has, 800 something bases. It's like now you're just playing world police and, you know, you're no longer a republic. You're trying to expand the empire. And if we learned anything from Rome and the republic and the empire, that's how it crumbles. You get too big, you get too fat, you get too bloated, you get too broke. And everything at home domestically falls apart while you're trying to play world cop internationally. So there has to be some nuance. Again, I'm not an extremist. Right. And I'm not a complete sloppy person. There needs to be some moderation.
For sure, no doubt. But for sure, full isolationists will bring a world war like World War II. I mean, that's what happened in World War II. Because FDR was an isolationist. He was a progressive isolationist who did not want to help.
Churchill stepped up because Neville Chamberlain said, no, you know, we don't want to get involved. You know, we're the UK. We don't get involved. You know, let Hitler do what he wants to do. Let's make peace with Hitler. Oh, he can take Poland. It's fine. It's okay. You know, he can take Austria. No big deal. Then Churchill's like, I don't think so, mate. Like, we can't do it. And right. Then what we're would next. The world be if we didn't have...
Right, if we didn't have a Churchill.
A Churchill and we had a Chamberlain. We'd all be speaking freaking German.
Well, so, we wouldn't be speaking at all. We wouldn't be speaking at all. Yeah.
You're right.
I mean, that's the reality. I mean, like, the one thing I get very upset about this, like, we backtracking with the genocide. I mean, like, that itself really bothers me when people constantly say it. Since when is war considered genocide? We're not doing this on purpose. But how, what are we supposed to be, passive always? We're trying to be proactive here. If we're going to be passive, it's going to be again over and over and over and over and over again. I mean, why is it that the Jews have to be turning the other cheek? That we don't believe in the other cheek rule. That's a Christian rule.
Guys, I try to put myself in other people's shoes. Because you see the images. It's death. It's destruction. It's war. It's horrible. But ask yourself this, logistically, most people don't know. You know, you've seen the protests in London, and someone said to the guy, Konstantin Kisten, if you can get that guy out, he's amazing. He said, oh, you're saying the river to the sea. What river and what sea? And it was a British guy. He's like, honestly, mate, I don't even know. They gave me the sign. I'm just out here to protest. I don't know. They don't know what the hell they're talking about here. Now, I'll tell you what, if you actually follow logistically what's going on in Israel right now, you know, a million plus people have been relegated to the Rafah border of Egypt. By the way, if you see the border of Egypt, you can show some B-roll somehow. You talk about build the wall, Donald Trump. That is the biggest, craziest, wildest barbed wired wall I've ever seen. That's the Egyptians keeping out the Gazans. Okay.
It's 10 so times.
The IDF has a million plus Gazans, Palestinians trapped. Right. They have nowhere to go. They're against the wall. And what are they doing to those people, these genocidal IDFs? What are they doing? Nothing. Here's some food, survive,
water,
shelter, water. Now, I ask you the opposite question. If Hamas, right, or Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, had a million Jews against the wall, the corridor, what would they be doing to those million people? I can assure you it would not be food, water, and shelter. They'd all be dead. So ask yourself what regimes are really doing when it comes to genocide. Because some people, it's lip service, and some people actually do it. If the Jews wanted to eliminate everyone in Gaza, they have what is known as nuclear weapons, and they have all the bombs and missiles that they could ever want.
Right. But they could easily carpet bomb the Gaza without giving everything. Warning. Yeah, without giving any warning.
Hundreds of thousands, not millions of deaths, but they don't.
Right.
But if Hamas had that opportunity, there'd be 6 million dead Jews again. So stop it with the both sides thing. It's totally ridiculous.
And by the way, most people don't understand the Jewish mentality. We are only 15 million in the world, and they got to understand we're always in the brink of extinction. So for you to even take out 1,000 civilians in one day, right? What do you think is gonna happen? Honestly, like what kind of reaction you think is gonna happen? Like, it doesn't make sense. I mean, I know my great grandfather was killed in that kind of way in where they lived in Uzbekistan from Islamic extremists. Like, wow. One night they came in and they started, you know, killing, and they took an axe, hit him over the head. That was my great grandfather. And then, you know, there's many stories like that, and you have stories in Jerusalem about 150 years ago where they, in the middle of the night, extremists just came slitting people's throats. I mean, people don't know this history because no one really studies real history today in America. You don't study real history. You have Holocaust deniers. You have slavery deniers. You have deniers of every atrocity in history in order to desensitize you and have you literally brainwashed to things that are not real.
Yeah, it's sad what's going on. We've learned that, you know, feelings are more important than facts. And then there's things it's not the truth, it's truthiness. And then there's alternative facts. There's also fake news. There's also tons of, you know, social media is good and it's bad. Because the beauty of social media is that anyone can get on there and say what they want to say. But the ugliness of social media is also that anyone can get on there and say what they want to say.
Right?
So it's like, it's a double-edged sword. I ask all my friends, because eventually I do want to get married and have kids, and I have a bunch of kids. And I say, what's the good, the bad, the ugly of marriage? right? And he goes, I said, he goes, well, you know, like my wife, for example, he goes, I love my wife. He goes, the good thing is every time I come home, there's my wife. The bad news, every time I come home, there's my wife. So that's how it is. Social media. You know, if you've ever seen any of the shows like Jay Leno did, or even what the late night shows do today, they go around, they're asking people, you know, today, Martin Luther King was killed today in 2024. What are your thoughts on Martin Luther King? He just got killed today. He died. He's old age. Oh, it's so sad. It's so sad to hear about MLK. And he was a great man, and, you know, he'll be missed. It's like, he was killed in 1968, guys. They don't know this. They don't know what the cause of the Civil War was. They don't know what caused, like, their right. You know, because in school, unfortunately, our education system, unfortunately, they're teaching the things that necessarily shouldn't be focused on. Gender, ideology, perspective. They're not teaching the math, the science, the arithmetic, and by the way, money and personal finance. They don't teach that.
No, they don't.
They're the levels they should be.
Right. So, and plus the teachers are not morally sound. They're not morally sound. Many of them not morally sound. I mean, I think that's a prerequisite to be a teacher. You're molding people's minds. They need to have a moral prerequisite. We have it in sports. When you sign a contract with a sports guy or even an entertainment company, you have a moral clause. Where's the moral clause for teachers? For sure they should get paid more, but add the moral clause. They don't have that. Well,
look, you're talking to somebody that's been in finance since 2006. So that's 18 years. My last job before I got into finance was I was a teacher.
Really?
I taught second grade for a year. I was a nightlife, nightclub guy in Miami in my early 20s, right? I did it. Did I do it? Yes. Well, what do you think? I did it. What about that? I was a part of it. I said, I got to stop partying. I got to stop drinking. I got to stop womanizing. And I need to stop waking up at noon every single day. And I said, what job do I have to be up early that I can do, you know, from time to time? Substitute teacher. Okay, cool. What do you need to do to be a substitute teacher? Well, you need to graduate college. I graduated college. Great. I started substituting at my old school, elementary school, middle school. And it was amazing for the following reasons. Just like I said, oh, the best thing about my wife is she's always there. The worst thing is she's always there. The best thing about being a teacher, other than helping the kids, was I was like the one dude with a bunch of females. It's all women that are teachers. But, you know, if you look at the biggest problems that young people have is that a lack of a man in the household, lack of a father.
Right. Right.
Lack of a father figure, lack of a leader, all the biggest problems that happen with children. Look at the facts, you know, whether whether it's homelessness, whether it's suicide, whether it's anxiety, it's all from a lack of a man in the household. And right. In the school system, it's all women. I love my women. I love my mom. I love my grandma. But the men kind of G-check, especially other young men. So it's all women that are raising our children, literally in houses and literally in school. And then, okay, great, what's wrong with that? But women, they have what is called, they don't want to rock the boat. They want everyone to get along. Men can be disagreeable. Yeah, I don't think so, bro. It's not what I, nah, no way, dog. Women, let's just get along, the more communal. And there's also the vast majority of Gen Z women and millennial women that identify as LGBTQ. So you coalesce and put this all together. Who's raising our kids these days? It's broke, gay women who are teaching our kids how to grow up. Why do you think we have so many problems? So,
right. It's not really coming from from a base of a family structure. That's the reality. So to teach family, you got to be taught by a person who has family. Right, right. I got you. No doubt. Mr. Sosnick, Adam. I'm sorry, Adam.
Adam, bro, we're the same age. What are you doing? Yeah.
Listen, I have a...
If anything, Moses over here with the beards, I should be telling you. Mr. Yeah. How do you say your last name?
Rachmanov.
Mishbucha.
Listen, we're closing almost in 18, which is high life. But please hold on. After we end the live, I want to ask you another question privately. But nevertheless, guys, Adam, you should go to his podcast, subscribe. He has an awesome podcast, plus PBD podcast. And plus, everything that they're doing is awesome. Follow us on Minect. Hit us up on Minect. Hit us up on TikTok and all the other things we're doing with iShook. It's such a pleasure with Adam, and I'm sure he'll come on board again, and we'll actually talk about finance and business. But I want to tell all the Shookies, right, all the iShook guys, war affects business, and that's why we spoke about the war.
Of course. It affects everything. It affects life, what's going on right now. You know, it's crazy world out there, and I'm glad to be a part of it. I'm glad to have a voice. Sometimes I'm losing my voice, so I talk so much. I'm gonna get some tea and rest it for a little bit. But Benny, it's great talking to you. I look forward to many more of these. Thank you for doing what you do. Thank you guys for listening to this great conversation. I was gonna be a little bit more multifaceted, but we stayed on topic with what we were doing. But if you're interested, you can follow us at Valuetainment on the PBD podcast. My show is called the Sazcast. Or you can connect with us or all our business leaders and influencers and very, very capable, smart people on Minect. And Benny's on Minect too, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. I was there like literally before. That's why I heard on your show. I literally signed up that day. That's how good you guys are. So goodbye, everybody, for the live stream.